Monster Man, special episode, Devastation Beetle. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Noah. If you'd like to be like Noah and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities. Because we're between seasons right now, and there are no regular episodes, only special episodes, I want to take this opportunity also to thank someone else who has increased their existing pledge to the $5 level. So thank you very much, Connor. Your support means a lot to me. For today's episode, Noah has asked me to talk about a creature called the Devastation Beetle. The what, you might ask? Let's start by defining what a Devastation Beetle is. So the Devastation Beetle is a creature that first appeared in a supplement for D&D 3rd Edition, 2001's Epic Level Handbook. Written by Andy Collins and Bruce Cordell, this book provided rules for playing characters above 20th level, and included a number of monsters. From what I have read, I believe that the monsters were Cordell's bit. And other things. But that of the two authors, he was the one more responsible for the monster section. Now, the Devastation Beetle itself is kind of what you would expect. Actually, having said that, I suppose one might think of the Devastation Beetle as like a swarm of beetles, kind of a swarm of locust type situation. But this is the other thing. This is a great big beetle. And I mean a really big beetle. It was 3rd edition, I think, that introduced the system of challenge ratings, or CR, a numerical value indicating, you know, how difficult this monster is to fight. The Devastation Beetle has a CR of 50. It can project an acid cloud that there's no save against, because 6d6 damage is peanuts to the kind of characters that you're supposed to be playing if you're fighting a Devastation Beetle. It has 2,880 hit points and a plus 104 modifier to its bite attack. And if you thought that was a good chance to hit, just wait until you hear about the damage, because that bite attack is going to do an average of just over 160 points of damage. In case you'd like to hit the Devastation Beetle, it has a robust armor class of 72, and should you manage to beat that armor class, it's going to start the meal off with 20 points of damage resistance. Oh, and a spell resistance of 60. I believe that is a new system that was introduced in this supplement. And if one 2,880 hit point giant beetle wasn't enough for you, they can appear in groups of 2 to 5. So when I say it's a big bug, I mean, it's a very big bug. The Devastation Beetle is one of a group of creatures, the Devastation Vermin, as I believe I mentioned, together with the Devastation Centipede, Devastation Spider, and Devastation Scorpion. The size and type of these creatures is given as Colossal Vermin, which is definitely a band name. The weakest of these creatures, the Devastation Centipede, has a measly 1,728 hit points plus 96 to hit and an AC of 55. So, you know, it's definitely the wimp of the group and gets shoved into giant lockers, I suppose. Now, if you are an older gamer and you're hearing all these frankly ludicrous numbers, you might be thinking to yourself, well, that's 3rd edition for you in a nutshell. Bigger numbers, overpowered characters. This is mature 3rd edition. Although, to be honest, when this book comes out, I don't know, 3E's not been out for all that long. When did it come out? 1999? Maybe 2000? I mean, something like that, right? So this is actually pretty early in the game's history. You would have to be playing pretty energetically to get a group of characters up to level 30 by the time this book came out, I should think. I suppose you could start at level 20 if your DM's a glutton for punishment. Anyway, my point is that enthusiasts of older editions might tend to interpret this as an example of 3rd Ed's weird fixation on putting mechanics first. But actually, maybe not, because this monster does have a precedent in earlier editions. A similar monster turns up in the 1986 module M2 Vengeance of Alphax by Skip Williams. Like their counterparts from the 21st century, the 1986 monsters, called Earthquake Beetles, are intended to fight higher level foes. In fact, this scenario, as you can tell from the M prefix on the front of it, is designed for characters of levels 28 to 32. Now, stat inflation being what it is, the two creatures aren't quite the same, but then neither were the characters. In fact, because the Earthquake Beetle was reprinted in the creature catalog, we've actually covered it. It was way back in episode 327, back in season 4. So, the Earthquake Beetle is an old friend, and I believe I quite liked it when it came out, although it has a weird head. It has like a black dragon's head, and it doesn't look good. I think the artist may have been being over-literal about the description, I'm not sure. The weird head is probably one of the more important differences between the Devastation Beetle and the Earthquake Beetle. Frankly, I think it's an improvement in the Devastation Beetle. The more beetly appearance, it just works a little better. In fact, I think that there is a lot to be said in favor of the Devastation Beetle. Really, two main points that I think stand out. First, I think aesthetically, this is a very successful monster. You know, I don't know what it is about some animals that makes them work when they're scaled up and other animals, they don't. But it's the case, right? There are some animals that look frightening when you make them big and others that kind of don't. You know, you bring a dog up to the size of a Godzilla and it just kind of looks goofy. And honestly, a giant snake might actually be less scary than a regular sized snake because it loses a lot of the regular snake's stealth and unpredictability, and we lose the venom idea, right? Which, of course, is one of the main things that we're frightened of in the case of the snake. At a bare minimum, there are quite a lot of animals where the giant version isn't any more frightening than it would be if it were a giant pig. You know, it's just anything that big is frightening to some extent, but there's nothing special about this animal that makes it especially horrifying when it gets big. But I don't think that that is true of the beetle. Beetles kind of already look like they should be bigger than they are, don't they? Their hard exoskeletons make convincing armor when you scale them up. If I saw a huge beetle and I shot an arrow at it, and my arrow just tinged off of the beetle's hard outer carapace, I would believe that. I would think, yeah, fair enough, right? It's got like shiny armor. And they have a lot. Well, not all beetles, but some beetle species have all kinds of weird features. So you got, I mean, obviously this thing's got an acid spray that's inspired by the bombardier beetle. But even things like the elaborate, you know, quote-unquote horns on stag or rhino beetles, they look a little bit like the decorative crests. Kabuto? Is that the word I'm looking for? Kabuto? On like a samurai helmet. There's also the fact that the splayed posture of the beetle's legs, right? So, a beetle's legs kind of stick out to the sides of its body, leaving its body relatively low to the ground. Whereas if you think of like a giant, I don't know, hippopotamus or something like that, or the Bodendrucker, which is sort of like an elephant-like creature, the legs are underneath the body and the creature is so tall that your interaction with it is mainly going to be attacking its ankles. And I feel like that's less dramatic, whereas the giant beetle here kind of has its face lower to the ground, and that also means that it has this sort of plowing effect, right? If you can imagine it moving through a city, even though it's huge, it can't like stride over the buildings. It has to crash through things. So this is an animal where upscaling actually works. Also, now, I think if you are in a conflict with one of these creatures, which are, in D&D 3rd edition terms, size colossal, you are probably not in a battle that's using miniatures. But maybe I'm wrong. And if you are, I think those miniatures are probably comparatively easy to get hold of compared to other equally massive monsters. But I've got a great big beetle. It's not this size, but, you know, I think I bought it in a charity shop, and I think it originally came from a zoo gift shop. In general, very big animals are things where or very big people are things where the quote-unquote miniatures, the bigatures, are actually pretty easy to get a hold of. So there's that. Outside the realm of aesthetics, the Devastation Vermin are a lot of fun in a tactical sense. So the Devastation Beetle may be very powerful, but it's not clever, and its main goal is just to get food. A lot of the destruction that it causes is inadvertent. It's just a huge creature wandering around the landscape looking for things to eat. And if it stomps on people or crushes things in its path, then oh well. It just doesn't really take any notice of you because is 150 feet long. Now, that's approximately 45 meters for my metric listeners. So a fight with these guys, as suggested by the illustration in the book, I think, is going to be a whole exercise in sort of disaster management. You know, because if the devastation beetle isn't threatening a city or something, it isn't really worth fighting. Like, it doesn't have some evil scheme. I guess you might want to take it down before it gets to a population center. That sort of makes sense. But normally, I think you're going to be engaging with this thing as a crisis, almost like a kind of natural disaster. So even if your party of tiny golden gods are capable of taking out a beetle that has five times Demogorgon's hit points, a little bit more than five times, actually, if my math is right, those 66 acid sprays, they're obviously not going to do very much to you. But if this thing is in a crowded area, each of those acid sprays will drop all the fishmongers and chapmen and alewives and whatever that live in this fantasy city with a quickness. They can't stand up to that kind of damage. The average commoner will drop dead the moment they're exposed to the acid spray. And that's to say nothing of being stomped on or having your house knocked down on top of you. I think the landscape has to be something very different from a dungeon room to make the combat interesting. And that is even outside of the practical considerations of, you know, a thing that is, like I said, 100 feet wide and 150 feet long. 100 feet is approximately 30 meters from my metric listeners. So far, so good. I actually think that the look and feel of the devastation beetle is very promising, largely because great big beetle is just kind of cool. But, you know, there isn't an aspect of the devastation beetle that I would point to and say, I don't like this. But I do sort of feel a little bit like there's something missing. I feel like it needs something more. You know, this is not an uncommon complaint about the Epic Level Handbook. If I had to summarize most of the discussion I've read about the Epic Level Handbook in terms of its, like, critical aspects, I would say that there's a conclusion that, or specifically in terms of the monsters, you know, I didn't pay very much attention to the rest of the book. Monsters are kind of my beat. The criticism of the monsters in the Epic Level Handbook was that they're not all that, for want of a better word, epic. By that I don't mean that they aren't powerful, but that they're not often, or not always anyway, qualitatively different from their lower level counterparts. A good example would be the primal elementals, who are just, you know, whatever the biggest type of elemental was, greater elementals or something, but with more hit points and more AC and whatever. They're just bigger, stronger versions of something that already exists in the game, and they're not anything new. They don't relate to the kind of higher cosmic concepts that I would expect epic level PCs to be involved with. And the same is true to some extent of the devastation vermin. You know, conceptually, they do sound rather like a monster that could exist at a lower level. An ancient giant insect awakens from the soil and in its hunger unwittingly blunders into a nearby town. If you told me that that encounter was intended for level 10 characters, I would believe you, that just that the giant insect wouldn't have nearly 3,000 hit points. And indeed, at epic level, I would almost have expected the PCs to have progressed beyond even the kind of, like, grand strategy realm play stuff that would have them, like, stalling the bug's advance while the civilians evacuated the city and whatnot. Managing a realm during a natural disaster, at this point, is actually something that I would expect from a lower level PC. So I do feel like, although what we've got of the devastation beetle is fine, it needs something to zhuzh it up a little bit. You know, it just needs a little bit more. And I think one way to do that is to focus on the question of where it comes from. There's a very brief description of what these creatures are and where they come from in the Epic Level Handbook. So I'll quote it here. Devastation vermin are mindless agents of destruction, time-forgotten remnants from an alternate multiverse that comes into sync with our own only once every few thousand eons. Devastation vermins are creatures that have slumbered beneath the surface of the earth for untold centuries, hidden away and undisturbed. Often, devastation vermin are awakened by the encroachment of civilization into their nests or the area above them. When disturbed, they erupt from the soil with ravenous appetites, leaving swathes of destruction in their paths as they feed. I mean, it's not much. It is kind of the first thing you would come up with yourself. The bit about being disturbed by the encroachment of a human city, that is, not the stuff about being from an alternate multiverse. I like that. But maybe we can do something better than we bothered it and now it stomps us. When I think of beetles and other, you know, ground-dwelling or tree-dwelling kind of bugs, I think of them turning the soil over, getting it digested, breaking down organic matter, creating a fertile base layer for growth. Is this something beetles actually do? I have no idea. I believe that a healthy insect biome is part of making the soil fertile, but what do I know? The point is that it sounds good, and I like the idea of asking, you know, what strange life could grow in the mulch created from an entire civilization? Is this creature in some way terraforming, or other planeforming, the world around it? Again, I think that's a pretty normal way to think about an animal monster, to think about it kind of in terms of its ecological role, even if this animal monster is very much not like the animal monsters that we're used to. In Vengeance of Alphax, the earthquake beetles are controlled or summoned or created or something. So, Chapter 3, Night of the Beetles, sees the baddie, the eponymous Alphax, using a series of disasters to attack the dominions of the player characters. And among these are earthquakes. When the PCs investigate the earthquakes, they wind up falling down a hole or going down a hole and encountering a series of tunnels, which, you know, lead to a dungeon, and finding these magical machines that create the earthquake beetles. The earthquake beetles themselves are not necessarily hostile. They're just being produced by these machines, and the PCs have to solve some puzzles to deactivate them. Why this Bill character, who's sort of the guy who's running these machines, why the system would have this failsafe, who knows? Anyway, point is, I do like the idea that some villainous spell or scheme is awakening them. And I like also that Alphax is not, or Bill, acting on Alphax's behalf. I don't know how I feel about Alphax having a henchman called Bill. It's not a very epic-level name. Sorry to all the Bills in the audience. It would be equally ludicrous if he were called James. Anyway, point is, the earthquake beetles are not malicious. Alphax just knows that earthquake beetles have the side effect of producing earthquakes, and he is releasing them into, well, using these devices, into an area that the PCs are responsible for in order to, you know, mess it up with their earthquakes. So even if it's not intentional, right, here they're being used as a kind of vandalism, I like the idea that they're being awakened as the side effect, right? This could be the old Goblins in the Hills bit where, you know, it's not the construction of the city that's encroaching on where the devastation beetles live, but it's something that a bad guy is up to, and it's the release of the devastation beetle. And it's the release of the devastation beetle that alerts the PCs to what's going on. I don't know, somehow it feels fitting to me that this apocalyptic confrontation, this thing that should feel like the end of the world, is merely a side effect of the real threat, right? I think that helps make it have a suitably cosmic feeling. If we like the idea of an alternate cosmos as the origin of the devastation vermin, it could be a planar spillover type of situation, right? So the devastation vermin are just wandering through some portal from their home plane, and the PCs then have to go seal. Their huge size could be kind of a scale differential thing, so like when the PCs get to the other plane, they discover that these are normal-sized beetles, and they are teeny tiny. From a mythological perspective, I don't know that many beetle myths. I'm sure there are more than the one that immediately leaps to mind, which is, of course, in Egyptian mythology. In Egyptian mythology, the scarab is a representation of the sun, one of the many representations of the sun in Egyptian art. The idea is that Khepri, this beetle god, rolls the sun across the sky in the same way that scarabs, dung beetles, roll balls of dung. I like the idea of this thing as a dung beetle. That's an awful lot of dung if we're talking about such a large devastation beetle. It could also roll like debris or other things, creating like a huge sort of katamari type situation. In fact, you could have that be a locus of adventure. So maybe the rampaging creature has smooshed some shrine or alchemist lab or something that you need something from, but it's in this big ball that it's rolling. Alternatively, it could be rolling something a little more magical, like some huge sphere of annihilation or something like that. But I like the idea that it has a katamari. I don't know why that's funny to me, but just like leaping around on this big rolling ball of wreckage, trying to get in the windows of half-ruined buildings in order to get the blue jewel. I think there's something fun about that. So ultimately, I think how you use the Devastation Beetle really depends on how you want to interpret the beetle aspect. Is it funny because it's a creature that's tiny in our world, but here it can cause such destruction? Is it an indicator of the scale of the challenge our heroes face, right? If this is what the beetles look like, imagine everybody else. Is it just a cool image and challenge, right? Like legendary figures who are these high-level PCs battering the monster's armored carapace as it advances implacably on a helpless town. So I hope that this has been an interesting look at the idea of the Devastation Beetle. I have been a little critical of the Devastation Beetle as being nice but not super inspiring. I do think that if you've been playing 3rd edition to the point where your characters are level 25 or whatever, you probably have made your peace with the way that that version of the game expresses itself. You'd be unlikely to stick with it otherwise. So maybe it's not as big a problem as I'm making it out to be. All right. I think that's about all the time that I have to talk about the Devastation Beetle today. So Noah, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Everyone else, if you'd like to be like Noah and get your own special episode, remember that all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we'll be returning to a classic world of British science fantasy as we take a look at the monsters of Rogue Trader, the first edition of Warhammer 40,000. So I hope that you will join me then. For Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.